Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly, Giannis Janaeus, and Curtis Hurd. This episode will be looking back at the massive 2-1 victory for Fulham against MK Dons at Craven Cottage on Saturday. Huge, huge victory. We will be going through all of it. I look forward to doing this with my co-hosts. Looks like two of them are on the line. I'm going to bring on the first one first. Let's bring on Mr. Holly. David, how you doing?
Hiya, Russ. Good to be back again. Looking forward to doing the show with you guys. And Giannis, who, of course, a posse of us were hoping to meet against Bristol City, but it just didn't come off, unfortunately, which is sad for us, and I'm sure it was sad for Giannis, although I think he had a lucky escape missing that one, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Obviously, yesterday was the biggie and the must-win game, and it was a win, just. And you know, it's a win in different ways. In some ways, it should have been a lot easier. In other ways, we still nearly managed to shoot ourselves in the foot, so we'll be talking about that in the show, I guess.
Absolutely. We'll be talking about all of it, David. You know, it's a massive 3 points, but, you know, there are things to pick at, which I'm sure we will, but there are also things to look at and say, you know what, they got the 3 points. There are several ways to look at this. We're going to go through all of it. Let me bring on Giannis now, then I'll bring on Curtis. Let's start with Giannis. Giannis, welcome back to the show. Okay, Giannis, before we go any further, I just want you to know that I'm looking out my window and I have snow here.
Yeah, we're supposed to get some snow tonight. This is just total bollocks. And it's day one of the baseball season as well. So it just doesn't feel really spring-like, does it?
How are you doing, my friend? David started the show by just talking about the fact that he really wanted to meet you, but unfortunately that wasn't able to happen.
Yeah, sorry about that, David. Absolute cock-up. My wife and I flew to Chicago to get on a flight to London, and then when we got there, we discovered that the original flight was supposed to go through to Manchester, so the plan was we'd stop off in London for a couple of days. When we got to Chicago, we found out that had we stopped in London, we would have had to pay $400 surcharge, plus the returning flights to Canada would have been made null and void. So what we did is when we got to London on Saturday morning, we actually had to get on the flight to go to Manchester to then get a train back to London because we booked hotels. It was a complete mess. So I wasn't impressed, and I was sorry to miss the game and see you guys, although to lose in the last minute, well, yeah. But story of our season.
Absolutely, Giannis. Well, it's great to have you back on. I'm glad that I could have you on with David. And, of course, Curtis, I'm going to bring him on. Curtis has been a great addition to Cottage Talk. Curtis, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Russ. I'm very well, thanks. Got a bit of a sore throat from yesterday, but apart from that, I'm buzzing from the win. All together, very good day, full of nerves. And, everything turned out the way we wanted. And everyone was happy, so that was very nice too.
Okay, well, listen, my friend, I'm glad that you could join us for the post-match show, and I look forward to your opinion, Giannis's opinion, of course, David's as well as we go through this. But I'll start with you. Just share with me your overall thoughts on the victory yesterday.
Well, my opening thoughts on the match of the fans.
I'm glad that you started there. Go ahead. They were tremendous. I'm glad that you started there. Go ahead.
Well, fair play to all the home supporters, I think, and just well done from me as a player. As you can imagine, it makes an impact and you're more focused, you're more committed. And I really think that's at any level of football, really. So that's brilliant from the fans. And just the other thoughts I had from the match was the starting lineup and Tunnicliffe on the left. But I'm sure we'll discuss that in a bit. So
we will be.
Yeah, so I'll leave it there.
Okay, very good. David, I'm going to go to you. I'm glad that that Curtis mentioned the supporters, because I heard them the entire match when I watched it back. It was very self-evident how involved they were, and I believe that they were the 12th man. So talk about the support yesterday, because the fans were tremendous, but also just your opening thoughts on the match.
Well, so in terms of support, I think it's actually disappointing that Milton Keynes didn't bring a massive following, seeing as they're only you know, 45 miles away or something as the crow flies, I think, just outside London, very easy to get to. There's actually trains that go from Milton Keynes direct to West Brompton and Imperial Wharf and things, which are both stations in Fulham. So, you know, it's almost within walking distance from the train station for these guys. And that was the difference, really, yesterday, because we actually, it actually seemed like a big crowd at home, because we were quite full at the Hammersmith end, and it looked quite full in both stands as well, along the sides. It was just at the away end that, obviously, Milton Keynes had a couple of sections, but they hadn't filled it completely. And then there were several blank sections which hadn't been taken up at all. And that was evident in the atmosphere. And there was a real buzz at the Hammersmith end, I must admit. I certainly noticed that. And I was surprised the crowd wasn't bigger, actually. But I think that's to say down to the fact that the away end was quite empty. But in terms of the game, as I say, you know my thoughts yesterday. I felt that we won, but we had one hand tied behind our backs from the tactics. The tactics didn't allow us to do what we're good at. You know, we were very narrow. There were people out of position. And I don't mind people being out of position. You know, we get it with Tom Kearney if they still can contribute, you know, to the match. But the people playing out of the position or in strange positions and strange formations, I don't see how it benefited us, actually, because we still, you know, had issues with, you know, the things we have issues with. And at the end of the day, we gave away the most soft of, you know, defensive error goals you could ever do. So the change in formation, the change in shape didn't prevent that happening. To me, all it did was restricted us from beating who were a very poor team. They, you know, it was, on one hand, they didn't trouble us at all. They hardly troubled us. But on the other hand, they were just one stroke away from, you know, equalising and, you know, taking away the points from us, perhaps. You know, I see Carl Robinson was doing his Arsene Wenger impression or something, or Steve Evans impression. I think he's got to be your new hate figure, actually. He made Steve Evans look like a pussycat, you know. I don't know what he was smoking after the match or what they gave him to drink in the bar, but that certainly was not a true reflection on what I saw. Fulham was certainly dominant, but,
absolutely,
you know, say we had one hand tied behind our back because we had no width, we had no pace, and I think those things, you know, we really would have caused them problems if we had those things. But we also were victims of our own, you know, it wasn't just Slav's tactics and selection. It was also, you know, finishing. Our finishing needs to be better. When you get the chances, you need to take them. Other teams, such as Burnley, have shown how clinical they were against us. You know, we made a couple of mistakes and things, and they've taken it and pounced on it. And we didn't do that. And we could have had a lot more goals yesterday, so this scoreline could have been a lot more comfortable as well. And maybe it should have been. But it was a very nervy performance, and we did grind it out in the end, and we got our just desserts.
Yes. Yeah, no, David, listen, very interesting take from you, as always. You and I talked after this match, and I'm sure most of what we've talked about will come out, and it should, because you're entitled to your opinion. Definitely want to talk about the tactics, especially when we get to talking about the starting 11 in just a second. But before we do any of that, I have to bring on Giannis back. And Giannis, just share with me your thoughts. And listen, you've been to Craven Cottage I don't know how many times. So let's talk about how important the fans were yesterday. I thought they were massive, but I also want your thoughts on the match as well.
I think, to be fair, the fans, I think they've been massive all year long. They've had to put up with a lot of nonsense. And the one thing about Fulham fans, they do get grumpy at times, but they're always loyal. I mean, there's not one player in the squad that can turn around and get pissed off with the level of support that they get from the fans. We love our club. In terms of the game, I take it on face value. We obviously dominated the game. You know, we had close to 60% possession. And we came up against a team that played a lot. I mean, I thought they played well against us early in the season up at Milton Keynes, and they gave us a lot of problems. But yesterday they were poor, and we were fortunate enough that we caught them on a bad day. But we played well, and Slava had a couple of weeks to sort out the formation, how he wanted to do it. And it was a bit of a different one. But having said that, it got us the result we desperately, desperately needed. And now that we've got Preston North End, we go up to the North West on Tuesday night. It's a game where the result yesterday, I think, really should give us a little bit of a kickstart. I'm expecting us to do well there on Tuesday. Overall, I'm pleased with the result. Performance had some nervy elements. The goal we conceded was a little bit laughable. But at this stage in the season, in the predicament that we're in, we just need to take the points and run. And we've taken the points and ran with it, so I'm pleased with that.
Okay, very good. I'm going to come back to you in a second when we talk about the starting 11, my friend. But, Mr. Holly, I'm going to start with you because I know you were pretty vocal when you saw the starting 11 and, of course, the formation. So let's get to it. Just share me your thoughts when you saw the starting 11 an hour before the match.
Well, you know, we'd all agreed on the pre-match show that we thought he'd go back to the 3-5-2 type scenario and bring back, you know, players with width and pace so we could really go at them because, you know, we identified that this is a team that are, you know, they're not a very good goal-scoring team. We are potentially a goal-scoring team. So if it came to it, it was just a matter of who would score the most goals, and we have the ability to do that. So we needed to go at them. Because we've tried all different ways of changing our defence, and we still, you know, playing the three across the back, the five, you know, the four, whatever, we still concede these stupid goals. So let's forget about the defence to one point and go and attack them with an attacking formation. But it wasn't to be, and in fact, what we saw was almost, you know, basically the same sort of setup as we saw at Birmingham a couple of weeks before, albeit, I mean, there may have been a player or two different in there. I'm not sure actually now. Yes, well, there would have been because of course Amabieta had to come off in the warm up at Birmingham and was replaced by Byrne, but he was back, of course, at centre back, and we saw Tunnicliffe at left midfield instead of Hyman, of course, who was playing at Birmingham. But I think otherwise it was the same team. For me, obviously, I'm disappointed because, as I said on the show, I want to see us playing attacking football. And I thought this was really a team that we could hurt, you know, with width and pace. We didn't do it up at Milton Keynes, and that was, you know, one of those days that, you know, I thought then that the interim guy, I think it was Stuart Gray or whatever, took them that day. It might even have been Peter Grant. Didn't really, you know, take advantage of the situation. But yesterday I thought this is one at home that we can. But however, you know, we saw this 4-4-2 and this strange arrangement. We know Tim Ream can play at left back, but you know what you're going to get with him, really. At right back, of course, it was Richard Stearman. I hadn't seen him play there. I know Mike had been quite impressed with him up at Birmingham, but I think that was probably more of a one-off, to be honest with you. So it meant that we had two non-attacking full-backs, and but in midfield, we had two central midfielders effectively playing wide, who were always going to be coming inside. So I thought, well, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to try and win this game now? Because we're going to have to just barge through the middle because there isn't any width. But, you know, that's what he decided to pick, and obviously he felt that he wanted to grind something out. But I just thought, for me, it was a missed opportunity, really, to go against a poor team and to outscore them. And in the end, you know, it was very, very nervy the whole way through. You know, we got our noses in front. We again gave away a stupid goal. We got our nose in front again. But we did our best, you know, almost to shoot ourselves in the foot at times. It was through a combination of just, I don't know, tactics and poor finishing.
But okay.
We got the result.
Very good.
And, you know, I think the substitution that was made, we'll talk about as we go on, did show perhaps, it gave me an indication that I think, you know, we should have started with more, you know, more width and more pace. But see what others think anyway.
Okay, very good, David. And listen, you know, this is a huge talking point because, like you said, it was set up more defensively. That's the way it projected when I watched it back. That's certainly the way it looked. It was more defensive in nature to, like you said, to grind out a result. And in the end, it did work. But I was scratching my head. I'm not going to disagree with you there because I was hoping that we would see a 3-5-2. We did not see that. All right, Curtis, what are your thoughts about the starting 11? What was going through your mind when you first saw it an hour before the match?
Well, I first saw the starting 11 in Bishop's Park, and I was speaking to my cousin about it, who I was with, and we didn't know the formation, really. Didn't know if it was a 4-4-2, a 4-3-1-2, a 4-1-2-1-2. Some may have seen my tweet, and I originally thought it was a 4-4-2 with Ryan Tunnicliffe on the left and Kearney on the right. But I'll start with the back and go on. And Marcus, no surprise really. And the surprising thing was the back four. Well, the that before, when on deadline day, if you said, oh, Richard Stearman that we just signed and Tim Ream, we're going to be using them as a left and right back, well, I wouldn't have believed you. And it just shows how we played some players out of position, which I don't think's very good because they're not going to have their best game there. Ryan Tunnicliffe, for example, on the left, he's never played there before. So I'd have preferred to see him by someone, replaced by someone like Luke Garbutt or something who's naturally left-footed and can, you know, cross the ball in. And but apart from that, midfield, naturally four centre midfielders. There's no wide players like David was on about. And he says about the change with Richard Stearman and Ryan Fredericks, that was positive in my opinion, because it was when Ryan came on, he went and attacked them, but there was just no width at all pace. And I completely agree with David on this one. And but the only decision I have to praise is Slavisa's decision to play Rohan Ince, because I commented on the pre-match show on Friday and said that he deserves his place. I felt, and I think he did well there, and I don't think he did overly brilliant, but at the same time he didn't really mess up that often. He messed up a ball to Dembele from a defensive position to more of a central position on the pitch, and apart from that he played well. And you know, you expect the likes of Tom Kearney, Scott Parker, Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele to start, so you've got no complaints there. Maybe you could have played Smith, but that would have, if you played Smith, I definitely think you'd have to put Luke Garbutt on the right, Ryan Fredericks on the left, and get some people that naturally can cross.
Exactly. No, I agree with that.
Apart from that, not much.
Okay, very good there, Curtis. It's very interesting about Rohan Ince, because when I watch back the match, and I definitely want all three of you to comment on all the players, but definitely on Ince, I thought he did his job, and that's what you want for the position that he does, just to do his job, and I thought he did it well. It's not going to be flashy. He's just going to do the dirty work, and I think he did it well, and be the protector and really control the central midfield with Scott Parker. I thought he did a nice job. All right, Giannis, over to you on the starting 11. About an hour before the match, you tweeted to all of us basically that you were happy with the starting 11. I might be paraphrasing a little bit, but yeah. Share me your thoughts on the starting 11.
I'll tell you why I like the starting 11. The last time when we went up to Milton Keynes earlier in the season, they ran roughshod through our midfield. And as soon as I saw the way that Slav had put this together, I thought, okay, we're packing the centre here. It looks very, very narrow. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, we've got a lot of experience in there. And on a nice tiny pitch that we've got at the cottage, and with the experience that we've got, I thought we'd cause them some problems. There was, you know, a couple of things what we could second guess. I mean, Amad Bieta, we know is a red card waiting to happen. But then putting him in the middle with Madel, who's just been absolutely immense, I think is key, because he's someone who can keep him nice and calm. The Stearman one versus Fredericks, well, that was always going to be debatable. But I thought Stearman did a pretty decent job. But the midfield looked pretty concrete. And, you know, for as discombobulated as it might look on paper in terms of players playing out of position and on the wrong side, we cause them all sorts of problems. And I think that one of the ways we can maybe evaluate this in terms of, from the standpoint of Carl Robinson, the Don's coach, is that if he's looking, trying to predict a lineup that Slava was going to put out, this isn't what he had probably had in mind. And you saw that reflected in terms of Parker's performance, the way he was able to lead, not just that foursome in the midfield, but behind Dembele and Mack. And really, Robinson did nothing to adjust it. I mean, their goal came out of nothing. It looks on paper a negative 11, but it's a defensively well-shaped 11. And despite the way it may look, we still create a lot of chances. We could have been 3-4-5 up at half-time. We'd be debating the nuances of the formation had we been 5 up at half-time. I don't believe we would. So I'm prepared to give him credit here, because he's had 2 weeks to prepare. he's obviously looked back at the game tape from early in the season, and he's figured if we can clog the midfield up and go up against what they would do, because they had a 2-1-1, really effectively with the wide players, Murphy and Baldich, then there was a chance that we can overrun them, and that's the way I think it played out.
Okay, very good, Yana. So you think that Slavica really went in with the mentality that he was, I wouldn't say surprising, but basically out-coach him to begin the match, and he didn't adjust, which probably helped our situation. He didn't really adjust to what Slavica was put out there. He was probably expecting something else. So that's actually a very good point. He was playing the tactical game against the other head coach, and probably that's where the advantage came from. I was, you know, I see where David and Curtis are coming, though, because I wanted to see the 3-5-2, but you bring up a good point. If he's playing the chess match, he's outthinking his opponent. That's very interesting take there, my friend. All right, guys, let's now get into the match. We'll start with first half observations. I want all three of you to share your thoughts. I'll just share some key moments that I just jotted down, and then you can just share whatever you want on it. Obviously, Fulham came out very bright, had a couple of opportunities very early on, shot by Tom Kearney, and then you had the great chance by Moussa Dembélé in the third minute. And that was followed up shortly after that, in about the seventh minute, another opportunity by Tom Kearney. Later on in the first half, you had Ross McCormack had a shot hit the post in the 26th minute, and then you had two more opportunities, another shot that was by Tom Kearney, and Cody Cropper had to tip it over the bar, and then you had the opportunity, point-blank range by Moussa Dembélé, probably should have done better there, but there were opportunities there in the first half. And I got to be honest with you, going into halftime, I'm thinking, are we going to look back and regret not scoring in the first half because the opportunities were there? That's where I'm going on the first half performance. It was dominating, but they had nothing to show for it because the score, there was no score. So, David, I will start with you. What are your first half observations?
Well, I mean, you've covered a lot of it, and yeah, I shared the same view as you did. That would we be, you know, ruining these missed chances? But it wasn't completely one-way traffic, because I also, around the same time as we had those two early chances, MK Dons had an early corner, and this was something I watched at. And I was praying for Benelli to come out and take it, because it was one of those to take, but he didn't. He stayed on his line. Maybe he was slightly, you know, impeded by the striker there, but, you know, Milton Keynes' player had a free header at the back post, which he put wide. It was a chance for them. That's exactly the scenario. Just, you know, maybe I'm going off topic slightly, but we've been talking about before about a goalkeeper who commands his area. That was really one that the keeper's got to be out and take there, and then there would have been no chance at all. It was nice height, it was 6-yard box and everything. So they had a chance there. And I was also thinking a couple of times, I'm glad they can't shoot, because they, you know, there was once another guy burst through, you know, the midfield just parted for him, and got to the edge of the area and took a shot, put it over. I don't think that was the only chance. So they had, you know, one or two chances themselves to score as well. Our defence wasn't good enough to stop these things, but thankfully, of course, their finishing was poor as well. But really, you know, I think, yeah, Kearney had a good chance. The early one he dragged wide, and Dembélé. Keeper did make a good save low down from an angle. Don't know if you, you know, agree with what I thought, but as I said to you yesterday, I thought a couple of the saves the keeper made was slightly showy, you know. I think he made them look spectacular when they were, you know, a comfortable tip over the bar, but by throwing your body up and your legs up and everything, you make it look as if you've, you know, performed some sort of massive gymnastic feat, you know, just to save the ball. But I think he was showing off for the cameras as well there, Mr. Cropper. Thankfully, he didn't come a cropper. But that first half really is not much else to say. You know, we did dominate the half. We should have been ahead. But I didn't think the half was very good. It was, you know, I said at half time I thought it was poor overall, because there wasn't really any flowing football. I mean, we weren't playing great flowing football. It was still kind of stop-start, too much possession at times, too much messing around with it. We didn't really make too many mistakes, admittedly, but there wasn't the free-flowing football I wanted to see. But, you know, as Janis said, we did still create chances, and we could have been more ahead, or we could have had goals ahead. And you'll never know the situation unless we played the 3-5-2 that we were all praying for. You'll never know how that would have worked out in the same situation. Theoretically, it would have been better. We'd have been more attacking, more free-flowing, more ahead. But you don't know. And, you know, without doing it, you'll never know what the alternative kind of universe would have been for that one. But, yeah, good half in terms of the fact that we didn't let any in. Bad half in terms that we didn't score.
I totally agree with that, David. I was very disappointed. And listen, I'm glad that you brought up the opportunities for MK Dons because they did have some opportunities. We'll call them opportunities. And they did have a decent spell at times. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. I didn't jot them down, but very good by you for talking about that as well. All right, Giannis, I'm going to go to you. What are your first half observations? I think David shared some interesting thoughts, and be curious your thoughts on that, and also what I shared.
Well, I was just having a mull last couple of minutes, and I was thinking about when Slava was at Watford, and I'm looking at coaches like Sean Dyche, Gary Rowett, Karankrup at Middlesbrough, and the thing that these four coaches have in common is the ability to sometimes throw lineups out that you don't necessarily going to expect. And Slava had a habit of doing that up at the Vicarage Road when he was with Watford. So, I mean, that's to his kudos. I like coaches. Personally, I come from the philosophy where coaches have to be able to think and ask certain questions of the opposition, and that includes the coaching staff. First off, we had some chances. I mean, I don't think there's any question. We controlled the play. The Dons, and I'm not going to take anything away from the Dons. I happen to think that they're a better team than their position shows, despite how poorly they played yesterday. Early in the season, against us, they gave us all sorts of trouble, and against other teams they have as well. But what worried me is we went into halftime 0-0. We'd had chances to bury, and their keeper was... their keeper was playing well, and we've come up against a few of those this year that have had absolute, worldies, making either worldy saves, having worldy performances. So I was a little worried that maybe it was going to be another one of those games where either we, took the lead early and gave it up late, or we'd dominate the play and then still give it up late. So I felt that once we'd scored the first goal, we really needed to get a second, and that's a key for us. Once we get a second goal, then I think we really settle down. But how many times have we taken the lead this year and then just got all nervy about it? And the inevitable has happened, how Fulhamish we concede a goal, and usually late. So but the first half I thought was pretty good, and we created chances. We really should have been at least two or three out by the time we went in the interval.
You know what, Giannis, I'm glad that you've mentioned that, because while you're talking about this, talking about being Fulhamish, and certainly we were yesterday, how Fulham can be dominating if they want, if they get that second goal. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I thought about the two QPR matches. And once they get that second goal, they settle in and they continue to go. And I think for them, they need to get up by a couple goals to get comfortable. And then they can really get into it. But I agree with you, not getting that second goal. You know, we'll talk about the second half. Definitely was an issue, and of course in the first half, not being able to score, I think really hurt them as well.
For sure.
All right, Curtis, over to you. Your first half observations. What did you see?
Well, I think David and Giannis said it all. Really, I think we started off a bit positively with Tom Kearney shot, and then Moussa Dembélé, but like David said, we didn't have a. We only had periods of the game where we went and we tacked. And it was a bit... We didn't go tacking for about 10 minutes or any longer. It was just, the 5 minutes, and then we'd be back in our own half again. And then we'd go again a few minutes later. And it wasn't... We weren't getting the ball and putting it up there and, pressing on them all the time. And that was... Yeah, it was frustrating to see, but... Apart from that, MK Dons had a few good chances, which was disappointing to see. Luckily, they aren't very good at converting. And I thought one other thing quickly was the ref. And if you were there yesterday, I think the ref was pretty biased. And I don't like blaming it on the ref, but especially in the first half, giving yellow cards to Fulham players when actually they might not have deserved them, and MK Don's got away with a lot, and maybe I'm biased, but...
That's okay.
But, you know, I just think maybe a review from the Football League is needed, because the standard of referees in this league is appalling.
David's laughing because he probably agrees with you, Curtis.
No, I'm thinking we've got a new gentleman Jim in the making here. That's all, you know, because that's the sort of thing he would say. But Curtis, may I give you a bit of advice? Don't say the referee was shit or crap or whatever word you want to use or you're allowed to use, but don't say they're biased. They get very upset, you know, if they get accused of things like that. But personally, I didn't think he was too bad. The foul by Amabieta was quite bad. He's lunged in late. It was a definite yellow card for me.
I agree with that.
And
one,
the one from Stearman was back chat because Parker actually committed the foul, but Stearman was arguing it with the ref. And, you know, if you back chat a ref, you get a yellow card. And whether you know, I know we've seen some, you know, like Joey Barton's stamp went kind of unpunished by comparison, but it's just about. You know, you've got to accept the decision. If you commit a thing, you've got to accept it. And Amabieta was definitely a yellow card for me. And Stearman was back-chatting the ref. And so he got a yellow card. Perhaps you can argue that there were cases for some of the MK Dons to get yellow cards when they didn't. But, you know, once in the second half when they committed quite a, you know, cynical foul, I think one of the guys, he did get a yellow card. So I don't think you could put too much on the ref personally. I mean, I can understand people look at the refs and you know, question what they do, but I don't think the ref had a big influence on the game yesterday, personally.
Well,
okay,
I think they should have got a couple of yellow cards, and there was one that tried to dive in attacking a position, and luckily the linesman caught that, and the goal kick was given. But it was a dive, and I think definitely for that one, that should have got a yellow card, because you're trying to cheat, basically, and I agree with you on the Morbieta one. It was a clumsy challenge, but apart from that, I think Stearman's one for the back chat, I think that might have been given a little bit too easily. But yeah,
okay.
I'm probably biased, but you know,
it's okay, Curtis. It's really okay, David. Before we move on, because Curtis brought up a good point about diving. You hate diving as much as I do, so you probably agree with him on that point.
No, I must admit I'm struggling to think of the incident we're talking about, to be honest with you. But no, I'm certainly with that. I think you should get a red card for diving, really, if you know, if
okay.
It was possible. The trouble with the yellow red cards, it's like the death penalty, you know. Once you've done it, you can't revoke it, really. You know, the damage is already done. So you've got to be very, very sure about any decision that you know, that calls for a red card. And it's easy when there's an awful challenge, a very, very bad, dangerous challenge. That's easy. But when it's for anything else, like were you the last man in, you know, have you denied a clear goal scoring opportunity? Or, you know, was it a dive, or was it just kind of, you know, it's a little bit more of a grey area. But certainly, you know, I totally for, you know, giving, I think there should be more yellow cards given for simulation. Half the penalties we see are probably not penalties. The refs are con, people leave their legs in there. So I'm all for that. And certainly, I don't remember the incident that Curtis is referring to, but if there was a dive, then yes, it should be punished that way.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, guys, let's move to the second half. And Yanis, I'll start with you, and I'll just go through just some key moments and then get your second half observations. Fulham got the breakthrough in the 54th minute on a long ball by Fernando Morbieta, got to Moussa Dembele, who then passed it back to Ross McCormack, who scored, and Fulham have the lead. Fulham then had two decent chances to score and get that second goal that we were talking about. McCormack and Dembele both had opportunities, but Cody Cropper was the difference as he dealt with both of them. Unfortunately, as it seems to happen often, Fulham give up the lead in the 63rd minute. Yanis, I'll let you explain to anyone that has not seen this. I have to say, after I watched it, it was worse than what I listened to. It was actually worse. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it was worse. It was horrible to give up this goal. So at that point, Fulham and MK Dons are level 1-1. But thankfully, Fulham get the lead back in the 75th minute. They get the match winner. Again, this is set up from Moussa Dembele to Ross McCormack, and he gets the match winner. All right, Giannis, give me your second half observations, and also mention the substitutions, because Ryan Fredericks and Matt Smith came on during the second half as well. And there was another late substitution. I forgot about that as well.
Yeah, the goal had been coming, and it looked as though Dembele lost control of the ball, but he did brilliantly to knock it back for Mac to knock it in. And you could see, you can not just hear the relief, the palpable relief from the fans, but you saw the reaction of the players, and it was huge fillip to finally take the lead. The equalising goal, I can only say it's what I call a brain fart, because it was it's like when you carry out a televised chat with somebody who's in Jupiter. There's a delay, and it just seemed there was a ball over the top, and everybody stopped. It was a bizarre goal, and although having said that, Murphy, I thought, finished it brilliantly. It was a lovely lob, but I mean, to create something out of nothing was just. Slava must have been going, this is ridiculous. We've gone an hour, and they've done nothing, and then collectively as a unit, we've stopped just for that one moment. That's all it takes. And it's interesting because early in the season, when Slava first took over, he did say something about the fact that he felt that this team was mentally weak. And I still think we are. I mean, I think if we stay up, assuming we do, you're going to see a massive clear out at the end of the season, because he's going to want players who are much, much mentally stronger. That was just the back four stopped. Everyone stopped. Murphy's nipped through. He's lobbed the keeper. And it was like there was a pin went through the... the collective balloon. And then the Dembele winner was a lovely run by Mac, knock it back first time, side footed in by Dembele. I mean, he had a few chances yesterday. And again, the relief was back. And then the last 10 minutes felt like an hour. Because you're always thinking, are they going to do a Bristol City? Are we going to have a last minute shenanigans? But we held on. And I think that the win in itself was, a real test. That test, 10 minutes, was a real test of character. What worries me was that goal we conceded. It was the softest goal I've seen this year, scored at either end. And I'd love to know what Slava said in the changing rooms, or he's going to say tomorrow, in the practice, and say, look, okay, what exactly happened there? Can anyone maybe stand up and explain? Because I don't know what was going on there. Just one of those odd ones, but... At the end of the day, we got the two goals and we won it. So, huge sigh of relief from me, and hoping this is going to leave us on the bigger and better things tomorrow night, or Tuesday night, rather.
Okay, Tuesday night. Okay, very good, Giannis. And that's why I'm glad that you went into a little bit detail talking about the mental part of it, because it continues to happen. These mental mistakes that kill us. You can dominate all you want. It's that one mental mistake that can do you in, and thankfully they got the match winner afterwards. But if they didn't, we'd be looking back at this and how did they, again, it happens again. So we have to talk about it, and I'm glad that you brought that up. All right, Curtis, you were there. I definitely want your observations of the second half.
Well, I think the first goal, it was just good that Ross was in the right place at the right time, and the next bit I don't particularly want to talk about, but when we gave our lead away, about that. After that moment, just felt robbed, it was their first shot, I think, and it was awful. My first thought was, is it Bristol City all over again? And can't imagine going from the Europa League final to League One in a matter of years, and just bizarre, really, how we're in the situation after 13 years in the Premier League, but we're here, and luckily we got that goal late on. But the MK Don's goal, sorry. Very, very confusing. Don't know how the ball just got there, really. And I heard one person behind me say, well, how did that happen? And just two players going from the same ball. And Murphy, I think the player was that finished it. It was a good finish, but maybe Marcus came out too much on the bouncing ball, but you can't really blame him because I think the two centre-backs to blame here. But all okay when Dembele scored and the crowd went mental. It was a relief and joy. And yeah, it was a brilliant moment when Dembele scored.
That's great. That's great, Chris. Before I go to David, there's one other thing I want to ask you because I was talking to one of our College Talk co-hosts, Emilio Danello, and one of his criticisms in the second half was bringing on Fredericks too late. I want to get your thoughts on it because Fredericks cross set up the winning goal. So do you think that Slava should have brought him on earlier?
Well, I think he should have started him, but if he did bring him on, yeah,
well, that
bring him on earlier.
Right.
You know, Stearman, I said it on Friday, I said, well, I'd put Fredericks ahead of Stearman, and Mike and David disagreed, and like David said earlier, I think it was just a one-off Stearman's Birmingham, and which is really disappointing, but he should have brought on Fredericks earlier, because we know Fredericks will run at them, we know he'll put crosses in, and he did. He ran at them, and every time Fredericks had the ball on that right side, he was running at the defenders, and I was thinking, just run at them, go get into the box, try and get a penalty, try and cross it in, try and, you know, get close to the goal in that 18-yard box, and hopefully a penalty will come or something, or we'll score, and yeah, that was one of the mistakes of the substitutions, I think, definitely bring him on earlier because he's a very good player. And I think we only bought him for about 250k. So, a very good signing in the summer.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, David, over to you. I want to get your second half observations. And listen, I know you like Ryan Fredericks, so definitely want your thoughts on the substitution, because Emilio and I did talk about this, and he was adamant that he believes that Slavica should have brought him on earlier and that he could have affected the game even more. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting because when we had the player comparison a few weeks ago, of course, Emilio was the one who was least sold on Fredericks out of all of us, I think. Obviously, that was in the comparison between him and our friend, of course, Ashley Richards. Of course, both myself and Mike thought that Frederick should always play over Richards. Emilio was a little bit more on the fence on that one. But now it's like, you know, the whole thing's been turned on its head because Richards is nowhere to be seen. He can't even get in the team when we're playing defensively, which I suppose, you know, I can hear Yanis cheering then under his breath, I think. But not under his breath. Yeah, Yanis has made no secret of his love for Richards, as we know, obviously. But, of course,
right.
It's a Stearman who's, you know, not done very well at centre-back. To be brought in at right-back is a very strange selection, really. I can remember it being done once by Fulham very, very successfully when we were, I think we were still in the League 2 or League 1 as it is now, and we played Wimbledon in the FA Cup at home, and we played four centre-backs because Wimbledon were renowned for their long ball football, of course, and we played across the back four centre-backs, and we beat them because they had no way of trying to put the ball diagonal or long or straight. They came up against a centre-back who was good at heading whatever way, and it completely took them off their game, and it was a brilliant masterstroke. But, you know, in this case, I'm not sure. But let's go back. I'll go back to the sort of the key points. First goal,
yep.
It was a long ball, perhaps slightly hopeful, by Amabieta towards Dembele. The Milton Keynes centre-back has made a complete hash of it, completely misjudged it. He's got caught underneath it. Ball's gone beyond him. Dembele's got to it first, and he's clear. And to be honest with you, he's taken an awful first touch, much too heavy. But he's managed to, like, thankfully, I don't know if the keeper could have come and smothered it or not, but he's managed to get to it first and pull it back. And McCormack just literally threw himself at the ball, I think, really. It was almost like he was falling over the defenders to get to the ball, but to bundle it home. So we got our lead anyway. That was a great thing. And then in a similar way almost, their goal, haven't really touched on it, but if you look, and I've looked at this one actually on the replay a couple of times because I'm trying to work out what's happening. And if you look, Tim Ream, who's playing left back, is actually between Maddle and Amber Bieta for some reason, and I don't know why. And when a hopeful long ball has been played forward by Milton Keynes, Tim Ream has tried to go for it. And we know what he's like in the air, attacking the ball. He's not the best. And it seems that he's just got completely in Amber Bieta's way. Both of them have missed the ball, and it's dropped easily, for the Milton Keynes player, clear. And he's done a nice little lob over Bettinelli, I guess you could say. But it was a ridiculous situation. It was just comic, defending there. It was like the Marx Brothers or something across the four. We might as well had them there, rather than who we had. Why was Tim Ream there? That's the question I'm asking. Why was he in between the two centre-backs when he's meant to be playing left-back and there's no one there? I don't know. And he's gone for it. He's put Amber Bieta off. They've both missed it. And, we're back on level terms. And it thought, this is, just typical Fulham. It's just absolutely typical Fulham. We spend all day trying to get ourselves ahead, and when we get ahead, then we give it away. But thankfully, it wasn't to be, and, we've made the change. Fredericks has come on, and straight away, as others have said, we've started getting forward and width, and he hasn't been on that long, Fredericks, and he's put in a lovely, deep cross to the far post. McCormack has, got in the position, headed it back, perfectly for right into the path of Dembele to run it home. And so, we're back in the lead, thankfully. But, of course, we had that scare in the 90th minute when Milton Keynes had the free kick on the edge of the box, of course, and just went into the sort of side netting. And it was always nervous, We even saw like a comic substitution with 2 minutes of injury time to go with Dan Byrne coming on to play an extra central defender. We already had four central defenders on, and then, Stearman had gone off at that point. But
that's right,
We'd gone, Dan Byrne and Amo Bieta on there, and Maddle. Really, it was slightly strange. But getting back to the sort of the key substitution, I think if Stearman had been doing a great job defensively at right back, I could understand it more. But I thought he was shaky the whole game. I think, Mike described him as being like a bag of snakes or something, all over the place, like a bag of snakes. And he was a bit like that, really. I don't think he was ever settled at right back, and I don't think he offered us anything defensively. He got beaten a couple of times far too easily. Balls played inside him or past him, and players run past him so easily. At least with Fredericks, we know he's not maybe a top defender, but he's an adequate defender, and he has the pace to make up for his errors. And I think at right back he would have done a better job than Stearman did, and we'd have had all the benefits of the ability for him to get forward and obviously offer us some width and pace. Yes, we know he's not maybe a 90-minute player, and bringing him on as an impact sub, perhaps is a useful addition, but I think that this is where Slavica got it wrong. I don't think Stearman offered us anything, really. I think we should have, had him on from the start, Fredericks. Other sub, of course, slightly strange as well, bringing on Matt Smith, I guess.
Matt Smith, yeah.
Taking off Kearney and putting McCormack left midfield. That was almost, almost a sign of desperation as well, like we're chasing the game, and I'm not sure why we did that one at that stage. Not really, but, we held on in the end, and that was the main thing. But, you've got to watch that comedy of errors between Ream and Amer Bieta for their goal.
Oh, I saw it, David.
Yeah, it's just, you can't believe how things like that happen. I mean, we've made some terrible mistakes.
David, I could not believe, like I said, when I listened to it, they made it sound like, Sean Davis said it's the worst, I think he even said it was the worst thing he's ever seen, and I thought he was underselling it. I and that's crazy to even say, because it was that bad. It was terrible, David. It was terrible. It was terrible. Anyways,
that's fine. Anyway, I've said my piece on that.
You definitely have. And the one thing that, to back up our discussion talking about Ryan Fredericks, Sean Davis on the radio broadcast kept saying, I'm paraphrasing, but he kept mentioning that they needed someone like Ryan Fredericks, to do the runs, And I agree with him on that. I agree with you guys. That's why I found it interesting that Emilio was mentioning that to me, so I wanted to bring that up during the show, that maybe he should have come on earlier, and I think he should have. All right, guys. Let's now talk about the full-time stats. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the stats. Just tell me quickly what you get out of them. And, Curtis, I'll start with you. I'll just go through the stats here. Possession Fulham had 58.2% to 41.8. Total shots, 22-12 in favor of Fulham. On target, 9-3 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, 75% to 64% in favor of Fulham. Fouls, 18-10. Fulham had more fouls. Corners, MK Dons shaded that, 6-5. Crosses, Fulham had more, 21-18. Total passes, 412 to 284 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 345 to 187. 7 in favor of Fulham. Tackles, 17 to 13 in favor of Fulham. Duels won. MK Dons won that, 56 to 43. And aerial duels won, they won that as well, 17 to 11. All right, Curtis, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
What stands out for me is two things, the possession and the total shots. So I'll start with the possession. And Slavisa, he likes to keep possession, we know that. And what it was yesterday was we kept it for longer periods, I think, rather than keeping the ball more in comparison to them. Well, obviously we did, but in the burst we had of possession, we kept onto it for longer than we usually did. And that was more attacking as well, because I think Tom Kearney went side to side and guided the ball and used the wide players like Tunnicliffe and even Stearman and to, you know, keep the possession and things like that. And total shots, 22. Well, when have we seen 22 shots before? We definitely took more shots than usual, and that's promising to see and good to see as well. But there was a stat earlier on in the season where we converted more than half of our shots at home, which under Slavisa we're doing less and less of. But as we discussed on the Middlesbrough show, I think, is it Fulham's defence keeping more clean sheets? Well, not clean sheets, more good, more less conceding, let's say, and Fulham strikers going less, or is it and it just really surprises me how we have having 22 shots and scoring two against a side that looking like they're going to get relegated now. And I still think there's a lot of football to be played, and I said yesterday whoever loses, I think they'll go down. I think MK Dons will go down, but like I say, there's still 7 games, and I think we should have buried the goals a bit more to our shots, really.
Okay, very good there, Curtis. Yeah, because again, if you're looking at the total shots and on target, you got 22 and 9 on target, and 22 is a huge number for Fulham, and they should be scoring more than 2 goals. I definitely agree with that. The total shots stood out for me. Giannis, how about you? What stands out for you from the full-time stats?
Oh, without a doubt, Jazz Richards not playing. I mean, that's a key stat. You don't need anything else. As long as he's not there, we're all having a bloody good laugh. It makes me shudder to think that he's going to be playing in the European Championships this year. I mean, honestly.
He probably is.
Cookie Coleman must have been blindfolded when he thought of taking even selecting him. 58% possession is always positive. 75% passing accuracy is good. It's been a few games since we've had that in terms of the passing accuracy, so that's very pleasing. And it's all about momentum, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, hopefully he's given them the day of today, and they need to feel good about themselves. And they need to leave the cottage from yesterday and say, you know, the fans, not that the fans have not been behind the boys, because we have all year, but the fans are really behind us and they're willing us on, and let's go to press and be positive. And it's funny, I don't, I'm envisaging a very different lineup when we go northwest on Tuesday night. I think it'll be a little bit more open and a little bit more expansive than what we saw yesterday. So, you know, players like Ryan Fredericks, I think, are going to make the lineup. I'm going to give Slava credit here. He's identified where the weaknesses are, and he's identified the mentality of the club. It's not just now, but it's been for a couple of years. It's been very fragile, and so he will tape with what he's got. But as I think whenever we're playing games, Russ, and we've got, you know, at least 55% to 60% possession, I think we're doing well. And remember, as I've said many times before, this is not his squad.
Right.
So he's doing the best. He's trying to make a chicken salad out of Whiskers super meat and chicken and ham paste. It's not necessarily a tasty morsel for all of us, but we've got to give him some time.
Okay, very good. All right, David, over to you. What stands out from you from the stats, and then afterwards, just quickly dial back in, my friend.
Sure. Well, in case you didn't know, Whiskers Super Meat is cat food, by the way. I'm not sure, Russ, if you know that one, Russ. We have that in the UK.
I didn't, but that's okay. I didn't.
Yeah, just explain that one, because I thought, I wasn't sure if it was American brand. But anyway, in terms of stats, well, I think the stats are pretty comprehensive. In every criteria, we are the better team, or we have the better stats. And in some cases, you know, more so. I mean, the strange one, of course, the anomaly here was the corners, which in this case I don't think it has much bearing, particularly. It's just that we seem to be more prone to conceding corners, I think, than other teams do. But, you know, the only things that are the anomalies apart from that really is the fact the score is only 2-1. I think from looking at those stats, you would expect a more comprehensive scoreline, except if your name is Carl Robinson, obviously. But there's not really much else to say to that. But, you know, it's a strange thing because we have a strange lineup, a strange formation against a very poor team, and yet we did manage, you know, to have much more shots than we do on average. So it's who knows what's going on. I think we all need a spell of with the men with the white coats. Perhaps we're all looking at it the wrong way around. I don't know.
It's fascinating, David, because when I looked at the stats and you see how we dominated, and, you know, if you look at the lineup compared to what the starting 11 was, it's fascinating. So, yes, maybe we all need the men in the white coats, as you always say. But do me a favor, my friend, just to wrap up the show, just dial back in, and we'll go into rating the players now. All right. Curtis, I'm going to start with you. I'd like to see if we could do each one of you guys do kind of like a 2-minute countdown. You know, just if you could get all of your ratings of all the players in 2 minutes. You think you can do that, my friend?
I'll try.
I'll do
your best. All right, okay. So, Marcus Bestinelli, 7. Yeah, did a good job with what he had. Maybe, you know, like I say earlier, came out a bit too much on a bouncing ball. MK Dons didn't look like scoring much, so positive. Tim Ream, 7. I was impressed yesterday with Ream. Looked calm, composed as always, and even a few crosses in and supported Ryan Tunnicliffe on his not-so-favoured foot. And he played well, and I think the next match deserves a call ahead of Luke Garber. Richard Stearman, 5. Richard didn't seem comfortable. He also let their player through a couple times with only offside helping us. He was slow on his feet and didn't communicate well, and this performance doesn't quite match his terrible one when he got the red card at the cottage last time, but it was a bad one, put it that way, and I thought it was, and it just didn't look comfortable. Michael Maddell, 8. Michael did very well, in my opinion. He didn't do anything vital, anything outstanding and such, but he did it in a calm, composed manner and won most of his aerial duels, if not all of them. And it was really pleased to see how we've solving our defensive our defensive problems by finding someone like Maddow. Obviously, we're not going to solve it overnight, but it's a start. We've got someone that's better than Richard Stearman has been. And whether he'll keep that up until the end of the season, I hope so. But that's just something that's time will tell. And I think he'll be very important next season if we keep him. He's a great player and good header of the ball. Next player, Fernando Morbieta. Just breakfast challenge. Well, at least he didn't get sent off as usual, which is a bonus. Played a six, didn't do that much. And next one, Scott Parker. Eight. Tempted to give a seven. He didn't do anything absolutely outstanding, but he led the team well. He played well himself, doing his usual trick by turning, creating space for himself. Played well, I hope he signs a contract, even though he's getting on a bit now. But maybe we could have him as a player coach, because he's definitely influential in the changing room. That's for sure. Other centre mid, Rohan Ince, six, played well. I was tempted to give him a seven, and but I've gone with six. Average game, strong in his challenges, and both of his performances as Fulham player at the Cottage have been good, and I've seen him play well as a Fulham player and Brighton and Hove Albion player at the Cottage, and I quite like him as a player. He's very good in his challenges, and don't think he was as good on his Cottage debut though, but yet again he did play half the match. Tom Kearney, seven, an average game for him, but what really frustrates me about Tom is sometimes he's afraid to shoot on the edge of the box, and yesterday I noticed it more in the second half. You know, he had that shot in the first 40 seconds, and a couple in the first half, but looked afraid to shoot in the second half, and it's so frustrating because he can shoot from there, like we've seen against Brighton, Hove Albion at the start of the season, as well as Hull City, and you know, he did it in a slightly different situation against Charlton Athletic at home, but you know, still outside the box, he's got good accuracy, and apart from that, he was good. He was key man in keeping the ball, I think, and as I said earlier, went side to side and to help the player on that side and keep the ball. But just one thing I want to say about Tom Kearney before I move on is when he came from Blackburn Rovers as our first money transfer, we didn't know too much about him because we only in the league for the first year. We could have seen him at the Cottage once, and you know, when Felix McGaff came in, I think we played Blackburn pretty quickly in the first start of the season, and when he came in, we weren't looking at the other team, we were looking at all the signings he's brought in, like Thomas Isfield, Sean Hutchinson, Nikolai Bodor, for example. And so, yeah, I don't think we were particularly looking out for good players. So we didn't know much about him, but he's been key through the season and key performances multiple times this season. And he's one of the most frustrated out there, probably, because promised promotion and et cetera. And not as bad situation as McCormack's in, but I feel next season he should be more influential than he is this season, and especially if Scott Parker leaves, and maybe you should think about building Kearney, a team around Kearney, rather than McCormack, and
totally agree, Curtis.
And maybe both, and you know, I think not so long ago Mike Gregg said we had 11 players and subs in the starting 11 contract of the team, so we're going to have a massive clear out in the summer, and I think massive clear out, you know, you usually have a lot of players coming in, so hopefully he'll be key in building a team around. But like I say, it's all up to Slavisa and Mike Rigg, and yeah, hopefully they'll do a good job. And so apart from that, which player am I doing now? Oh, sorry, Ryan Tunnicker.
Oh.
Seven.
Okay.
He did well in the bad situation, really. He started on the left, like I said, not his natural side, so he did a good job and was helped a bit by Tim Ream, like I said, when I was talking about Tim, and I would have liked to see him in centre midfield or even right mid, you know, his natural side. So the thing about putting a right mid, a left-footed right mid or right-footed left mid is you can't whip balls in. And you know, we didn't have Matt Smith up front, but saying that, we had Dembele, and Dembele can score from his head, but just playing players in their natural position, I think, is key. Anyway, next player, Dembele. Closed everything down, so I'll give him an 8. And
okay.
He was making himself available to the ball carrier, I thought, especially when we were on the back foot. So he was creating space for himself up front, and ball was good for McCormack, and good to be in the right place at the same time a bit himself. And just talking about next season for a minute, we won't have him, so. Which makes me feel, if we stay up, are we going to Bolton or Aston Villa lose their key players and be in a tricky situation? So hopefully Mike Rigg and Slavisa will, you know, sort it out and maybe replace him or give Matt Smith a chance, but definitely need to have a massive clear out and maybe get someone like Naki Wells, a fox in the box, like Dembele has been. But apart from that, good performance from Dembele.
Okay.
McCormack, so I've given four players 8, including McCormack. So those were the four players that I've really thought stood out yesterday. McCormack was one of them, got the first and set up the second from him, and good game, and not much to say other than that.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, Giannis, over to you. Give me your ratings for the players. Let's try to see if we can do it in a few minutes.
Yep, I won't say long. Bettinelli 6, didn't really have a lot to do. Great to have him between the sticks, though. It's the greatest respect to Lonergan, and you know, having the confidence of a young keeper there. He's pretty vocal with his back four. It's a big help. The back four, Tim Ream, I'm going to give 5.5. I'm not convinced. I'm just not convinced that he's of this level. I'm not sure about his pace. Yesterday, he got befuddled with that. You know, the goal that they scored, he was in the wrong position. He will know why he was standing between Mather and Mbeyeta. Certainly not in my strongest lineup if I can have him out there. Stearman, I'm going to give a 6 because you know what? Considering he's been in and out of the lineup, they put him in an unfamiliar position. I actually thought he did okay, and I always say, well, you know, put players in certain positions, but good players should be able to play in most positions. I don't think he did a bad job by any means. Maddle, I give an 8.5. I thought he was immense, and he has been since coming over. We've got him as a loan, right, Russ? So we've got to sign him up as quick as we possibly can. Amabiette, I'm going to give 6.5. He stupid yellow card again. You know, you're going to get one of those again. But he did set up the first goal with that clearance. So, and I like the fact of him playing at the back with Maddle. Maddle seems very calm. And Amabiette, for all his international experience, is a little bit of a hothead, and he needs someone fairly steady and assured and communicative alongside him. And so I think that's a good pairing. They seem to work. Really, apart from that, you know, the brain fart that led to the goal, they didn't do too badly together as a tandem. Rohan Ince, 7. I thought he had a decent game. I always liked him at Brighton, worked very hard yesterday. Seemed to fit nicely in with the formation that Slava put in. Ryan Tunnicliffe, 7.5. Some good physical challenges, like his energy. Did a decent job dropping back to help the back four. And remember, he's really had a truncated season as well. And I like the energy levels yesterday. The next one may surprise you, Russ. I'm going to give Parker a 9.5.
Wow.
I thought he was absolutely sensational. I think, I'm not sure we're going to be able to sign him in the year in terms of, because I think, you know, he's got so much mileage on those legs of his. You know, I'd like to see him kept, you know, as a player coach. But yesterday he was absolutely everywhere. And the indicator of how well he can play or how well he will play is the fact that he wasn't subbed. It was a captain's performance. But he is, you know, he's tough as nails. He's not afraid to put it about. And he really was everywhere in the park. I think it's the best performance I've seen from him at the club. I thought he was sensational. Kearney, an 8, could have scored early. But he's such a good young talent. And I agree with the notion of building the team around him. He's a clever player. He's an astute player. And I thought he worked well in that midfield tandem yesterday. Dembele, a 7.5. I still worked hard yesterday, but I still need to see a better conversion rate. I really do. It's great that he set up Max's goal. It's great that he got the end of Max's pullback. But as a striker, your conversion rate has to be good. And I'd like to see him put away a few more of his chances. It's not like he didn't have them yesterday. And Mac, I'm going to give an 8. Mac, I was one of the first ones to question, you know, the signing, us paying that much money from Leeds. And I was critical, as you remember, Russ, at the start of the season about his weight.
Yeah.
And I'm still not convinced he's totally 100%. I still, you know, you can't exactly start improving the fitness and the weight, you know, weight ratio, the BMI, in the middle of a season. And Slava knows that. But in terms of next year, if we're really looking at, you know, bouncing, you know, assuming we stay up and we bounce back, have a chance to go to the Premier League, he's got to look at the talisman, you know, the catalysts, and Mac is. And he's got to lose some weight. I do think attitude reflects leadership. Players will look at, you know, the way he conducts himself. He's got an extra yard of pace in there, and I think losing a little bit of that baby fat will help him. So overall, with the 11, it was pretty pleasing. Fredericks did decent when he came on. Byrne did too. Smith not really on for too long. I'd like to see Smith get a run out. Byrne's been a bit unlucky in terms of, again, in and out of the lineup, but you might see him there Tuesday. And Ryan Fredericks, I think, will play Tuesday, and I'm high on him. And, you know, if any lineup that involves Jazz Richards on a one-way ticket to Saturn is one that is always one that's going to please me.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, David, over to you.
Well, I'm surprised, really, in a match where we only just managed to beat a poor team and didn't score many goals, that people have been quite generous, really. I don't think this was anywhere near our best performance of the season by far. And so I haven't felt as generous as you guys, I'm afraid, unfortunately. So in my case, Bettinelli, I sort of agree with Yanis. He didn't really have much to do. The very little he had to do, he did okay. No real comment otherwise, so give him an average 6 out of 10 mark there. Stearman, I thought he was poor, Stearman. He really didn't defend that well. He got beaten far too easily. They just pushed the ball past him and ran a couple of times in the second half. Offered absolutely nothing going forward. Going to give him 5 out of 10. Maddle, clearly our best defender. I don't think he did anything spectacular. Certainly didn't make any terrible mistakes, but, you know, had a good, solid game. I think he's worth 7.5 there. Amabieta, you know, fairly solid game, but I'm going to dock him down back to an average 6 because of his rash tackle, which cost him a booking, which meant then he had to be careful the rest of the match. Thankfully, he was and didn't get another booking, but 6 for me, because also he was, you know, in part to blame for the goal a little bit. Ream, 5 out of 10 as well for me. Did try and go forward a couple of times, admittedly, but didn't offer a lot. Really, you know, we're going to get with him. He's okay as a left back, but why on earth was he between Maddo and Amabieta? And basically, I blame him first for the goal because he was out of position. He went for the ball with Amabieta. They both missed it. So 5 out of 10 for Ream for me. In terms of the midfielders, on the right, Tom Kearney, I thought he had a solid game, but I don't think he was spectacular. Needs to sharpen up on his shooting a bit, really, from a couple of good positions, scuffed it a bit. 6 out of 10 for me for him as well. I think that the two real stars were our two in central midfield there. Scott Parker, again, led by example, you know, putting his body on the line, did his best. You know, it didn't always work perfectly, but he did his best to drive the team forward. and be tough in the tackle and everything. And you know, I've got to give him 8 out of 10, really, Scott Parker. I think it was not the best I've ever seen him play, but it was certainly a good captain's performance there. Rowan Ince, I'm going to give him 7 out of 10. A bit unspectacular, perhaps. Maybe the sort of kind of Dixon Atuhu type figure we've been looking for. Didn't do too much that was exciting, but he was tied in, he mopped up, and he was strong. And he, you know, provided a useful foil for Parker, so 7 for me. Tony Cliff, this is the one that surprised me. I thought he was totally ineffective on the left. A couple of times when he did get forward, you know, it was once he was in a good position on his left foot, and all he had to do was to shoot, and he blazed it kind of God knows where. It went backwards on itself towards the halfway line. Another time he was in the penalty area, all he had to do was turn and shoot on the ball, and he tried to backheel it and end up backheeling it out of the area to a player from a good shooting position. I think he was totally a fish out of water playing left midfield. Didn't really offer anything to the attack. Wasn't able to sort of do what he does in a sort of a tackling manner. I just thought it was a waste of a position for him, so I'm going to give him 5 out of 10, totally ineffective. 2 strikers, both did their primary role, both bagged a goal each, and both set up a goal for the other people. I'm not sure. I mean, I saw an awful lot of criticism for Dembele in the match, I must admit. I'm not sure where it was coming from. I don't think it was that bad. You know, he does what he does. He has his strengths, he has his weaknesses, but you know that he's always good for a goal. Yes, he did miss maybe 1 or 2 chances as well, but so did other people. Can't really complain with what they did. I'm going to give them both 7 out of 10. I think they had reasonable games. They say but neither was spectacular. I mean, McCormack a little bit unlucky, I guess, with that shot. I hit the post as well. But you know, on top of that, really, my man of the match is Scott Parker. And Michael Maddle, second for me for his organisation of defence.
Okay, very good. All right. Curtis, who's your man of the match? I don't think you named it.
Michael Maddle. Like Dave just said, he's he was organising the back, and I think he's he'll be a brilliant signing because it is a loan with an option to buy, and I think that fee's about $1 million, but I'm not too sure, but. I think it's around there, so if it is, I'd take him because he's very composed, and like David said a minute ago, he did nothing spectacular, but what he did do, he did well, and there's a couple of situations where MK Dons booted the ball out. We might have had a corner or a cross or something, and Maddle had someone pressing him, someone challenging for the header, and he kept on. Where he wanted the ball to go, he got it there, and you know he didn't play you know this world, you know, scored the hat trick, but he was solid, and that's really what you want in a centre back, and that is the best performance of a centre back I've seen in a long time at Craven Cottage.
Okay, very good, very good. I'm a fan of Michael Maddle's as well. Yanis, I think you made it pretty clear that it's Scott Parker for you, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Very funny. All right. We do have some comments on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for Man of the Match. I'm just going to read them quickly. And then someone actually had a question for us, so we'll end the show by going to this person's question. It's actually Gary Cooper. I'll get to his question in a second. He had Scott Parker as his Man of the Match. Guy Rolfe had Musa, Alf Russell had Parker. Liam Ballard said Scott Parker, Rowan Ince. They were both brilliant in that holding midfield role. David Johnson Wilson said Parker. Roger Lewis said tough choice, Parker, for his leadership. Close second and third, Kearney and Tunnicliffe. Kevin Dowie said Parker was my choice, Dembele a close second. Tracy Foam Girl Fowler said Scott Parker, he ran his socks off, ran the show, and the young kids and the thing or two. Basically showed the young kids a thing or two. It's what she was trying to say. And then Gary Cooper had this this topic, and Yanis, I'll go to you. He says, with the amount of games Jokanović has under his belt, you would think by now getting the formation and tactics right by now? Do you think I think what he's trying to say is, do you think he would have gotten his tactics right by now? You know, basically changing from match to match. What are your thoughts about that? Because he does change match to match. What formation he's going to use, and also what starting 11 he's going to go. Do you think he has like a set formation, Giannis? I'm curious.
No, he doesn't. No, I don't believe. I'll correct myself there. I think he does have a set formation in his mind, but he doesn't have the players to formulate that formation. I think he's still experimenting. And that's why at the end of the season, I think you're going to see a mass clear out. A lot of these players he doesn't fancy. And he's just sticking them in and sticking them out and what have you. But if you look back to the year when Watford got promoted, they didn't have many injuries, but he had a very consistent lineup game in, game out, much like going back to Roy Hodgson. Roy Hodgson stuck to his 14, 15, 16 players. I don't think he's got the players that he wants to formation. So I'm prepared to give him slack, because remember, he's okay. Coming mid-season. Some of the players that he's got, he's clearly not comfortable with.
Okay, very good. David, over to you, because Gary actually brings up a good point. You know, he's had a good amount of games under his belt, and his tactics and his formations and starting 11, it changes every match. Giannis brings up a good point that he's still possibly experimenting for the future, you know, to really nail down what he wants to do. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's good to get questions. Thanks, Gary Cooper. I think it could be high noon, actually, for Slav soon, actually. So,
you had to go there, right?
I couldn't resist. But, no, I think, you know, if we got relegated, there really could be a high noon because, you know, God knows what would happen, and let's hope he doesn't come to that. But I think Giannis was right, what he said there. That I think that we've seen that Slav wanted to play the 3-5-2, but he hasn't got total faith in the players that are involved with it. And to play the 3-5-2, you need your three centre-backs to be strong. You need your wing-backs to be good at what they're doing. And we've seen, you know, Luke Garbutt have off games. We've seen Fredericks perhaps can't last the 90 minutes. And we've seen goals still conceded despite having three centre-backs. And so, yeah, I mean, it's difficult for Slav. And at the moment, I think now he's into a kind of a limp home mode, if you have. Do you have a limp home mode on your car, do you, Russ, that... If it all fails, it sticks it in third gear and you have to drive home at a slow speed. It's kind of like that. It's a limp home mode, I think. He's just kind of... You don't have those things, you know?
I don't.
An emergency. Yeah, you must be less high-tech over there, Russ. You need a new car, I think. But, yeah, we're in a limp home mode, I think, now. And he's just basically trying to take each match and... forgetting, you know, having a basic formation and lineup, which he just tweaks from now and then. He's just kind of trying to fight each fire individually. And I don't think he got it right yesterday. I think he should have had more confidence in an attacking lineup, but we got the point. So as I say, I can't be too critical.
Okay, very good. And it's actually a great question from Gary, because I remember talking to our friend in Israel when we had him on the show, talking about how we like to play the 3-5-2, and I have a feeling that's his go-to formation, David, and I think he's just trying to get by to the end of the season, get his own team, and then you'll see his tactics and his formation be more under control. I think he's kind of making it up as he goes along, trying to put out fires each and every match. Curse, what are your thoughts on this?
I agree with David and Giannis that he hasn't got the formation. He hasn't got the players for the formation he wants to play. And thanks, Gary, for the question, by the way. And but he the signings he had is Labyad, Madil, and Rohan Ince, and I think Labyad is an attacking player, you know, got pace and stuff. He wants that. He wants someone strong in midfield, so he's got Rohan Ince, and he wants someone calm, collected, and cool at centre-back, and that's why he got Madil. So with the loan transfer, with the transfer window that we've had, he's tried to get, well, with the embargo, he's tried to get on loan who he can possibly get that would help the squad, and he's got them three players now, and Maddle's a good signing, and like we were saying a minute ago, fantastic player, and hopefully we sign him up in the summer. But he's trying to get a squad that's more calm, robust, and can attack. And we know he prefers the three centre backs and that formation, and he wants to play that, but he can't because he hasn't got the players to do so, I don't think. And like Yanis said, whether he can do that with the players he's got, debatable. And when they've done it, they've done okay at it. But whether he trusts his players with that role, and maybe going to more simple 4-4-2 or something different to what he wants because of the players.
Okay, very good. And you know, I just go back to the conversation. It was Rafael Geller and Israel that were talking about the formation, and I believe it was either him or Joshua Halleckman who talked about how he wanted to play the 3-5-2, but he didn't have the players. And I have a feeling that's a similar situation now. I think he has played it, but I think he'd like to play it more. That's just my feeling. I think that is more of his go-to formation. I think once he has the players that he wants next year, I think we're going to see a different team. But for the most part, I think he's just trying to get by. But very good question by you, Gary. I think normally he would have his tactics ready or done, you know, what he wants to do. I just don't think he has the players for it.
Russell,
all right. Yes.
Well,
yes,
I've got 2 minutes early. I've got an eye test at about 12:30 just down the road, so I'm going to bid you all farewell.
Okay. Very good,
bye.
Giannis. Thank you for coming on, my friend.
Bye.
Okay, very good. That was our co-host, Giannis Shanaeus. Curtis, any final thoughts before we go?
Just we said it so far in the show, and we're going to have a massive clear out in the summer, so be prepared for that. And whether we stay up or not, it's still going to happen. And hopefully Mike Rigg, you know, can't guarantee he'll do a good job because he's a bit of a liability, but let's hope he does and gets the right players, and most importantly Slavisa's players, because we know Slavisa's got different formations he can play, and but he has that preferred 3-5-2 like we're just discussing, and we'll be I think we'll also be getting a few foreign players and from different leagues, and some we won't know of, like Michael Maddle, and hopefully we'll get a few more leaders, because I think we're lacking that, and that's why we brought Chris Baird in, I think.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with you there, my friend. All right, David, you have the final word.
Well, I just think the big question now is how do we get something from a totally unwinnable fixture tomorrow, which is obviously it's really our Achilles heel, a trip up north on a Tuesday night. To keep all the fans guessing, we'll discuss that tomorrow.
We will, my friend. You and I will be doing the Preston North End preview tomorrow, so please do listen in. I look forward to doing that with you, my friend. But it's time to wrap up the show. For Giannis Janaeus, Curtis Hurd, and David Holly, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers,
thank
guys.
You.
Thank you, Curtis. Great job.
Boys.